From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Arrowgate, full on. Can he stick with it? California Chrome. Arrowgate still coming. California Chrome.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
It's Ali Dar and Affirmed battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Ali Dar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Ali Dar heads apart. Affirmed's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Derby winner, Barnett Bird, closing a late gap, but it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched this network, the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in the starting gate with you once again this morning. And while every other major sport continues to be on hiatus, horse racing, well, they continue to run races and to do their thing in many parts of the country. You know, that's great news, too. When you think about it, that is really good news for all of you who are tuning in this morning for the next couple of hours, because this is a loaded show. And I want to welcome everyone who's joining me across North America on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country. And all of you listening digitally, you're doing that on our website at horseracingradio.net, or you're doing that through the podcast after this show concludes on our website. And, you know, normally I would be welcoming you to Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races on this particular morning. This would have been the morning we'd be there, and the afternoon we would be there to broadcast the Grade 2 Charlestown Classic. Unfortunately, that will not happen on this day, but looking forward to getting back to one of our favorite stops along the tour, Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. They just do a phenomenal job, and I really do miss not being there this morning. But this afternoon, we're fortunate because Oaklawn is going to play host to two rock-solid graded stakes races. You have the Grade 3 Count Fleet Sprint, and you have the Grade 1 Apple Blossom. The Count Fleet is race number 8, post time 4:14 Central. That's 5:14 Eastern. 7-year-old Whitmore. Love this horse. Back in the spotlight. You know, so often we see great horses or good horses in our sport retire far too soon. And I know the economics of the sport and the game and the industry and how it all works and the money that's involved when these top horses go to stud or become broodmares. I get it. But here's Whitmore, 7 years old, back in the spotlight again. The two-time Count Fleet winner will be among the favorites, if not the favorite, for trainer Ron Moquette in today's Count Fleet. He's kind of a throwback type of horse. And I can't wait to visit with Ron later in the program. He's going to join me 8:35 Eastern to talk about his veteran campaigner. The Apple Blossom, race number 10, 5:16 Central. That's 6:16 for those of you on the East Coast. Last year's Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, back in action following what was a dominating six-length victory in the Grade 2 Azari last time out. And I'll talk with her trainer, Tom Amos, coming up at 8:15 Eastern. So you got Tom Amos at 8:15, Ron Moquette 8:35. Not a bad way to begin this program and to kick off hour number one. Third choice on the morning line in that Apple Blossom is Serengeti Empress. She falls behind Come Dancing and CeCe as the other horses that are going to vie for favoritism in there. Come Dancing is trained by Hall of Famer Dwayne Lucas, who is looking for a fourth victory in the Apple Blossom. It would be his first win in the race in 16 years. His last one coming when he saddled Azari to her third consecutive victory in the Apple Blossom back in 2004. And speaking of Azari and those three straight wins in the Apple Blossom, the Hall of Famer remains the only horse ever to win three runnings of that historic race. She was ridden in all three of those victories by Hall of Famer Mike Smith. And Mike has won the Apple Blossom more than any jockey in history. He's won it 6 times. He's going to be with me to wrap up the show today at 9:40 Eastern to look back on Azeri, to look back on his victories in the race with Zenyatta, and to talk about all 6 of those wins. Can't wait to visit with Mike, 9:40 Eastern. He'll be up early on the West Coast to do that with me. And I really think you're going to enjoy my other guests in the middle of today's show as we spend some time reminiscing about 2 tremendous racehorses. At 9 o'clock Eastern, Arthur Hancock, the owner of Stone Farm in Paris, Kentucky, is going to look back on the career of 1989 Kentucky Derby, Preakness, and Breeders' Cup Classic winner Sunday Silence. Really excited about that interview. My thanks to his wife, Stacy, for helping to coordinate that interview and get everything set up for this morning. 9:20 Eastern, Hall of Fame trainer Carl Nasker will be here with me to remember 1990 Kentucky Derby and Breeders' Cup Classic hero Unbridled and the late Francis Genter, who owned Unbridled. Who can forget that moment with Carl describing the race to Miss Genter as Unbridled had taken the lead? And he kept saying, "He's on the lead. He's on the lead, Miss Genter. He's on the lead." And then it turned into, "He's going to win. He's going to win." And then the iconic kiss of Miss Genter right as he crossed the finish line. I went back and watched that again. I couldn't stop watching it. It is one of those moments, and thank goodness that the television cameras caught it perfectly. It's one of those moments, the iconic moments that we have in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Just incredible moment. I can't wait to visit with Carl about that. By the way, 1990, what a year for Carl. That was the only year in which the Hall of Famer was named Eclipse Award winning trainer. So I'm going to spend some time looking back on that memorable time in his life, not only Unbridled and what that meant to him and to his career, but you know, certainly that entire period, that entire year, which was so special for Carl. There are people out there that are probably wondering, okay, Baron, well, maybe one person in particular, where's the countdown today? Where's the Derby countdown? 140 days, 10 hours, 42 minutes, and 25 seconds away from the Run for the Roses. That is bizarre. That is, I still can't get my head wrapped around this. The first Saturday in September, September 5th, Derby Day here in 2020. But hey, this is the world we're living in today. And everybody doing their best to adjust and to make alternate plans. That's the countdown to the 146th Run for the Roses. We plan on being there to bring you that exclusive radio coverage in partnership with Westwood One and NBC Sports here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Now, because there was no Kentucky Derby on May 2nd, we've been telling you for a week or two now that we are producing a one-hour broadcast from 5 to 6 Eastern on that day of a fantasy derby. And we asked all of you to weigh in and cast your vote as to which 20 horses, Kentucky Derby winners, you thought should be in the field. It's incredible. 9 of the 13 Triple Crown winners will be represented. You have the filly winning colors. You have the long shot upsetter, Mind That Bird, who is in there looking to pull off what would be another shocker in the fantasy derby. It's pretty cool. You can go to our website, horseracingradio.net/fantasyderby, to learn more and see all 20 horses. Next Saturday, on this very same program, the Equine Forum, I'm going to bring you a full post position draw. Going to be assisted by Dan Bork, the assistant racing secretary at Churchill Downs. And he's going to help me with the draw. We're going to do a pill poll, just like they do for every other race around the country. And we will draw post positions for the 20 horses competing in our fantasy derby. Then the pontiff of the pick four, Jude Feld, who was kind enough to set the morning line for the race, will come on, give you the morning line odds. And Ed DeRosa from Brisnet.com, who was kind enough to supply past performances on our website, is going to join me to give his thoughts on how he would handicap the race if indeed this race was taking place. And it is. It's a fantasy derby. Going to be really, really cool. 5 to 6 Eastern, Saturday, May 2nd. Don't miss it. We're actually planning a full day worth of derby programming for you. We'll replay our broadcast of some of past Kentucky Derbies that you'll hear throughout the day on May 2nd leading up to that Fantasy Derby broadcast. All right, here's our poll question for today. Question of the day before I get to the first break and get into our guest lineup, which, again, very, very busy. In honor of today's apple blossom at Oaklawn Park, who is your all-time favorite Philly or Mare? In honor of today's apple blossom at Oaklawn Park, who is your all-time favorite Philly or Mare? For me, it's easy. There was one that I fell in love with her. Excellent Meeting. And it's funny because I went back and looked at Excellent Meeting on Equibase today and was flipping through, kind of doing my own reminiscing. And I can't believe that it has been 20 years since Excellent Meeting last went to the racetrack. August 12th, 2000, her final start came in the Clement L. Hirsch Handicap. She won 8 of 20 starts. She was on the board in 16 of those 20, earned $1.4 million for her career. You remember she competed against the boys in the Kentucky Derby. She finished 5th that day after a rough trip. I thought she was a winner. I really did. That was in the 1999 Kentucky Derby. Excellent Meeting, trained by Bob Baffert. What a special filly she was. And so she's mine. She gets my vote. Who is your favorite filly or mare all time? I want to hear from you at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. You can also email me your answers, mike@horseracingradio.net, if you want to get in touch with the show that way. All right, going to get to this first break. When I come back, it's Tom Amos. He'll be followed by Ron Moquette. Arthur Hancock from Stone Farm will be with me at 9 Eastern. Carl Nafsker, 9:20. And Hall of Famer Mike Smith to wrap up the show at 9:40. A lot to get to. That's all ahead on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust Keep Safe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about Keep Safe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Spendthrift Farms' popular Safe Bet program is back for 2020, featuring freshman sires Brody's Cause, Cinco Charlie, and Hit It A-Bomb. Breed to one of these stallions and watch their first crop of two-year-olds have greatest stakes success on the racetrack this year, or you won't owe the stud fee when your foal is born in 2021. To learn more about the Safe Bet program, visit spendthriftfarm.com/safebet or call the farm today. That's spendthriftfarm.com/safebet. Spendthrift, the breeder's farm.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network. You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Serengeti Empress and Joe Talamo are in complete charge at the top of the stretch. Street Band and Sophie Doyle begin to run after her just a bit. Now My Lady Curlin is in stride, and here's My Lady Curlin. She's about to move into third, but still six lengths behind Serengeti Empress, who comes to mid-stretch, gets a left-handed reminder from Joe Talamo and another, and she has just run them off their feet in the Azari. She is still six in front. My Lady Curlin, Street Band, and Saracosa will battle for second as Serengeti Empress goes coast to coast to win the Azari. Serengeti Empress won by five. Could have been more. My Lady Curlin second. Saracosa third. Street Band finish fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna with you in my home studio. My producer, Lee Delapina, is in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. That was Vic Stauffer with the call of the Grade 2 Azari. Last year's Kentucky Oaks heroine, Serengeti Empress, returning to the races as a four-year-old, and that was her second start this year. And boy, did she just power away from that field. She went to the front, never looked back, and won by more than six lengths, and a very impressive effort. Joined now by her trainer, Tom Amos, as he gets set to saddle Serengeti Empress in this afternoon's Grade 1 Apple Blossom. Tom, welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for taking a little time.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I know it's a busy morning for you. That last race, boy, was that a special effort by her.
Yeah, it was. You know, reviewing what she's done in 2020 since her third-place finish in the Breeders' Cup Distaff back in November. That day she was third in the Distaff and got beat by two very good older mares. And Serengeti Empress being only three, that was a really big race that day against Midnight Bisou. And it just seems like coming into 2020 that she was a bigger and better version of herself. So we were really excited about her first start of the year, which was the Houston Ladies Classic. You alluded to that. You mentioned that the Azari was her second start of the year. And in the Houston Ladies Classic, I really thought I had her on her game and ready to go. We just made a really critical error in how we, you know, mapped out the race. And although we made the lead out of the gate, we slowed down the pace so much that we kept the whole field in it. So going down the backside, there's literally six lengths that separates first from last in the Houston Ladies Classic. And that's not what Serengeti Empress wants to do. She wants to break and create separation from her in the field and kind of take everyone else out of their game. Get so far in front that everyone has to start positioning earlier than maybe their horse's style would dictate. And that's how she wins. So I'm mentioning all these things because coming into today's race, the Apple Blossom, it's a much different complexion from either of those races that Serengeti Empress ran in this year. And, you know, the question of whether she can use her speed and kind of dictate things on the front end as she did in the Azari is a huge question mark.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, Tom, that you talk about mapping out a race when you refer to the Houston Ladies Classic and maybe a bit of an error in judgment as to how the strategy came together. When you look at the Apple Blossom, when you start to map this race out, I think people oftentimes look at trainers and say, hey, they just go over, they saddle the horse and let the horse do their thing. That's not the case. There's a lot of planning that goes into it. So take me through the process of mapping out today's Apple Blossom and your strategy with Serengeti Empress.
Right. Well, it starts with the post position draw. So we basically have a general idea of who's going to be running in the Apple Blossom well before it's drawn. But the Wednesday before today's race, we draw for post positions, and that's just a, you know, blind lot, and you get what you get. So think about it like a human race instead of a horse race. And if you ever watch the Olympics and some of those races, they stagger the start. So the people that are on the outside actually start in front of the people that are down towards what we would call the rail in horse racing. And there's a reason for that, because the further outside you are from the rail, the further you have to go in the Olympics. And the idea is to make it fair for everyone. They're running the same distance. Well, in horse racing, it's different. The starting gate is set up And if you draw the outside, chances are you're going to have to run further than everybody else. So the draw is not only important from that standpoint, it's key to note that Serengeti Emperor's drew to the outside, the 11 post. But then there's a matter of other speed in the race and what Serengeti Emperor's has to do to create her best race. And when you look at the race, there are some very fast fillies to the inside of Serengeti Empress. For her to make the lead in the Apple Blossom, she not only has to be as fast as those horses inside of her, but she's got to be a little bit faster because she's got to get in front of them and get over. And so that makes her task really difficult, with the understanding that there's a short run to the first turn at Oaklawn Park. And if we haven't gotten over to the rail by then, you know, we're going to be losing ground. So, you know, you start talking about specifics of the race and who's in it and who can create problems for us early. It's definitely the horse right to our inside, Cookie Dough. Her and Serengeti Empress have run against each other before. They did it at Belmont Park, and they set a blistering pace up front. Ridiculous is the word, yeah, I guess I would use. Each time the announcer called out the quarter splits, which they do during the course of a race, it was Belmont Stakes Day, so it was a big crowd there. You could hear an audible gasp from the crowd. And although Serengeti Empress was able to put away Cookie Dough in that race, it hurt her dramatically in her finish. And she still ran great. She ran second that day, and she lost to a very good filly. But you start to get an idea when you look at that race and you come into today's race, what can happen if things are too fast up front. So think about the horses each having a tank of gas. And when you're using, you know, gas, when you're putting your foot on the accelerator and you're using up part of that tank of gas, it doesn't leave you a lot of gas for the end. And so I guess that's the most generic example I can give you of what we're up against today.
Yeah, it's a great description, and it really does bring to light the challenges facing Serengeti Empress in this afternoon's Apple Blossom. Tom, are you comfortable that if Serengeti Empress does not get to the lead in here, that she can sit and still run a big race and run her race from just off the pace?
I'm not. I think Serengeti Empress has to make the lead to win the race. So, you know, our strategy is simple. We're going to go, and we're going to go until we make the lead. And how quickly that happens or doesn't happen is going to have a lot to say about how Serengeti Empress is going to run. I mentioned Cookie Dough to her inside. She is a problem for a couple of reasons. Not only is she very fast, but she doesn't keep a good course when she runs. So if you look at her last race, she's a horse that doesn't make the turns well. She gets out around the turns. And I have a real concern that if she doesn't make the turns well today, and we're alongside of her, she's going to take us with her. And that's, again, the cost of losing more ground. She has a brand-new rider on her today. It's never ridden her before. Paco Lopez has been riding her. But if you watch her last replay, she not only didn't make the turns well, she got out all the way down the stretch and had to survive a claim of foul to stay up as the winner in her last race. So I'm not only nervous about her speed, but the problem she could cause going into the first turn. And that's something that my rider is going to be aware of, Joe Talamo. I'm going to alert him to that. And she's not the only speed in the race. So you've got a very good horse that's considered a sprinter, trying a route race and come dancing to our inside. Florent Giroux is on her. And, you know, when you watch Flo ride, particularly these big races, he has made a very good living out of trying to take the pace right out the gate. He did it on Ette Indian to win the Fountain of Youth. And I look for him to show speed, too. So really some big challenges here.
Visiting with trainer Tom Amos here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Serengeti Empress ready to go to the post in today's Grade 1 Apple Blossom at Oaklawn Park. Tom, she's as consistent as they come. I mean, she puts in her effort every single time. 14 starts, 6 wins, 3 seconds, and a third. She's earned $1.7 million. You've won more than 3,700 races in your career. What's it like when you get a horse like this that is so consistent and always shows up?
Well, she's the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, she is, you know, without a doubt, the best horse I've ever trained. Winning the Kentucky Oaks was probably the most special moment of my professional career, and I was lucky enough that both my kids, who were grown, and and my wife, we were all there for the race as well as some close friends. So it was a really beautiful experience and one I'll never forget. And so she's got a special place in my heart. I mean, I've had her since the yearling sale at Keeneland when I found her in the backyard, thought she was worth purchasing. And by the backyard, I mean Keeneland's backside where they keep all the horses that are going to be sold and present them to you and show them to you. And she didn't sell for a lot. She sold for $70,000. And she's been with me, and I've been kind of plotting her course ever since then. So, you know, when she came to me on the track some 6 months to 8 months later and got ready to make her first start, I remember the conversation very well with Dr. Joel Politi, who owns her. I said, this horse can run. And, you know, it's very difficult to have a horse that's never run before and try to predict she's going to win some major race down the line, but I knew she could run. And she possesses a couple of things that are really, really important to all good horses. Number one, she's got God-given talent. That's the first. But the second is her mind. She's really, really smart and thoughtful and understands competition and understands racing. So, you know, what she loves to do is make that lead and get in a high cruising speed that doesn't take a lot of energy out of her. So looking back at the Kentucky Oaks, where she broke from a very outside post position, post 13, and had to get to the turn, he had to get in front, all those things happened, and she was able to get to the front, going to the first turn, and down the backside, they posted a very fast half-mile time for her, but she was clear of the field. I think the halftime mile time was 46-2. I'll never forget my wife saying, as we were watching the race, 46-2, that's fast. And I didn't even take my eyes off the screen, but I remember saying, not for her, it's not. And, and you know, of course, she went on to win. So, you know, that's the kind of scenario we'd like to have this afternoon. Whether that's going to happen or not, you know, I'd love to answer that question a quarter of a mile after the race. But I think we have some serious challenges ahead of us today.
You mentioned the fact that she is probably the best horse that you've ever trained, and seeing her at Keeneland, as you described it, in the backyard, out back as a yearling. Do you remember, Tom, exactly what it was about her that caught your eye?
Absolutely. They brought her out of the stall, and I was always taught, looking at horses, that you always look down first. You know, you always look at unstarted yearlings that you're looking at the sale. You always look at the legs first. And you're trying to look at confirmation. As time has gone on, I've not been as critical of confirmation as I once was. Every horse is going to have some confirmational flaws, and to spot a flaw, which most have, and say, "Oh, this horse has this issue in confirmation or that issue in confirmation," and immediately put an X through them, I think is a big mistake. So, as time's gone on, I've changed how I look at yearlings, and I remember her walking out of the barn area and into the sunlight, and I saw an athlete. I mean, this was like looking at, you know, for lack of a better term, and just going by athletes that I'm very familiar with, it was like looking at Leonard Fournette, who played for LSU, you know, just a really well put together athletic horse, and I knew I wanted her immediately then. She was by a sire that's relatively unknown and still probably in alternation, who, you know, the rule on sires is, and those are fathers of the horses, that was her father. The rule on sires is, you know, you have to win a grade one to be a successful sire. He never won a grade one. I think a lot of her price, which was well below the sale average that day, had to do with the fact that her pedigree was a bit obscure, but I knew what I was getting. I was getting an athlete, and Dr. Joel Politi was with me at the time, and he's got a good eye too. So I said, I really like this horse. And he said, so do I. We came back and looked at her a second time, and we still liked her a lot, and the rest is history.
Yeah, as I mentioned, the daughter of Pin Oak Stallion Alternation has gone on to earn $1.7 million. She's looking to add to that total later today in that Grade 1 Apple Blossom for Tom Amos. Tom, really appreciate the visit this morning. All the best this afternoon. Go create some more memories for you and for your family later today.
Thanks for having me on, Mike. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Tom Amos here on HRN. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send Tom a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion by visiting embracetherace.com. She's special, man, and she is fast. But you heard Tom. You heard him say, look, she needs the lead. We got to go. We got to get to the front somehow. It may cost her the race from that outside post. You have a short run into the first turn going a mile and a 16th at Oaklawn. She's in post 11. She's got to go. And Tom, hey, he didn't hold back any punches. He said, here's what we're doing. It's going to be catch us if you can, and hopefully, and look, Serengeti Empress is all heart. He referred back to that race in the Acorn at Belmont, 21-4, 43-4 for the half. They went 6 furlongs and 108 flat. That's motoring in a one-mile race. And she was eventually run down by Guarana. She finished second that day, but she's all heart. She's going to give you everything she has. And I think Joe Talamo is well aware of the task ahead. Be interesting to see if Serengeti Empress can get the victory later today. On the engine from the start, as they say. Should be fun to watch. Again, post time for that Grade 1 Apple Blossom today, coming up as race number 10 at Oaklawn is, well, I just had it in front of me. Where is it? It was 6:16 Eastern, 5:16 local time, central time, in Hot Springs, Arkansas. All right, time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf. When I come back, going to visit with Ron Moquette, who will saddle his 7-year-old veteran, Whitmore, looking for a third victory in the Count Fleet Stakes at Oaklawn today. That's going to be a lot of fun, too. We'll talk to Ron next. But first, your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
Pouring back the sands of time through the hourglass of racing history to a late November day in 1923 brings us to the story of a match race between two superb thoroughbreds who squared off in a rubber match, having defeated each other once already. It was at Churchill Downs, and an enormous crowd had assembled for what promised to be a dandy in no uncertain terms. The combatants, Harry F. Sinclair Zev and Carl Weideman's In Memoriam. Zev had won the first confrontation between the two in that year's edition of the Kentucky Derby, and In Memoriam had turned the tables on his foe in the Latonia Championship Stakes barely 3 weeks before this particular match race. Each of the owners put up $10,000. The Kentucky Jockey Club did likewise. The winner was to take home $25,000, the loser $5,000. Earl Sandy was in the saddle on Zeb. Mac Garner drew the assignment on In Memoriam. Zeb was a big brown horse wearing blinkers for this match, and In Memoriam was a strapping bay with a deep chest and a long, free stride. When they lined up at the barrier, every eye was glued to the two stalwarts, and the excitement and anticipation of the moment was indeed intense. Zeb made a false start. Then starter William Hamilton let them go on their way to a race that, to this very day, underscored in the annals of sport as one of the all-time great ones. Zev broke out on top, but apparently under orders. Sandy wrapped up his mount a bit and let In Memoriam under Garner go on out to set the pace. Down the stretch, neath the hallowed twin spires and on into the turn, it was In Memoriam by a length. On around the clubhouse turn, they stayed the same way, and as they went down the backside, In Memoriam opened the lead up to a length and a half. At the half-mile pole, In Memoriam headed by two, and Zeb's fans began to wonder if their favorite could catch his rival, who was running easily and being well-rated by Garner. At the 3-furlong marker, Sandy dropped his mount down and asked for a run, and a run he got. The white silks of the Rancocas stable glistening in the fall sunlight began to cut down the margin, and by the time they hit the top of the stretch, they were racing as a team, a ton of horse flesh pounding powerfully to the wire. This, my friends, was a horse race by any measure or means. In Memoriam on the rail, Zev matching marvelous strides just to the outside of him. As they thundered down the straight, Zev drew away to an open length lead, and then a length and a half, but with a furlong to run. It was for practical purposes all over. It appeared In Memoriam was a beaten horse, but wait just 1 minute. Garner began pumping, whipping, and driving furiously, and with enormous courage, In Memoriam came on again, closing the gap with every long, smooth stride. Late on that bright, sunny autumn afternoon, with shadows creeping across the racing surface, these two titans of the turf, with their brilliant riders driving their mounts forward in synchronized motion, provided the vast throng with the most magnificent spectacle of sport. The crowd roar had been swelling to now reach a crescendo as the two locked together just noses apart, only jumps to the wire. The 40,000 on hand at Churchill that day breathlessly spent from what had been a spectacular race. As they hit the wire within Memoriam on the rail, Zev on the outside, nothing to separate them. Zev roared some, and Memoriam roared others. "It's a dead heat," yelled one spectator who nearly toppled from a perch on the grandstand roof from all the excitement. Jack Dempsey, a longtime well-noted turf observer, called it In Memoriam by a nose. "In Memoriam," the wires flashed, and the telephones called out. But wait just 1 minute. The call came out that Zev had been declared the winner. So close was the finish that will always be, to this very day, a matter of dispute amongst those who saw it as to which horse actually had won it. There were no photographically recorded finishes in those days, only three placing judges hovering above the track at the wire, who apparently saw Zev's brown nose at the wire, a bare fraction before In Memoriam's ruddy bay nostrils. Both riders, Sandy and Garner, had handled their mounts beautifully. Losing owner Carl Weideman said to winning owner Harry Sinclair, quote, "It was a race fit for kings between the two best horses ever to be found," unquote. It all happened November of 1923 at Churchill Downs, a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
Get to know the men and women who make this sport go on Trainer Talk, presented by Facig Tipton. Mike Penna sits down with Hall of Famers, up-and-comers, and everyone in between with an intimate conversation that goes beyond the X's and O's. Hear their stories every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 219 XM 201 or streaming live at horseracingradio.net. It's the show that trainers listen to. Trainer Talk, presented by Facig Tipton, only on HRRN.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
We have another new leader, and this time it's the favorite, Whitmore, and he takes charge. He's a length and a half in front of Holy Boss from the outside, Mo Candy, but Whitmore comes to the final 16, drifts out just a bit, but he's got lengths to work with. Here is Whitmore. Yes! Wind Time is alongside. Smart's Free going to have to dig down. Now Whitmore explodes in the center of the track. And look at him fly. Whitmore has to go. And he did. Wow. That is a major league stretch run. Whitmore wins the count, please.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna with you over the course of the next, well, hour and a half or so. And getting ready to visit with trainer Ron Moquette. That was Vic Stauffer with the call of the Count Fleet Sprint Handicap in both 2017 and 2018. Whitmore pulling off back-to-back victories in that race. Came up just short last year, about 2 3/4 lengths to be exact, when he finished second in this race behind Mitoli. Today he looks to get back to his winning ways for trainer Ron Moquette, and he is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ron, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How about yourself? Ready to go with the big horse?
We're ready for action. We're pumped up. This is a day that we point to, for the last 4 years. And it's 1 week later than before, but it's still a day that we mark on our calendars and get really fired up for.
Yeah, and you should. And you should get really pumped up every time you saddle Whitmore. And I know he means a lot to you with everything he's accomplished. He can go over the $3 million mark in career earnings today with a victory. That's pretty special. 7-year-old gelding shows up every time. Talk about this horse and what he means to you.
He's the best horse I've ever had, and he's kind of like me. He don't have a whole lot of pedigree, but he tries hard, and I love that. I love that that he's an overcomer, and he's always the horse that has to take on the next up and coming. And a lot of times we send those guys back to where they came from, and sometimes we run into a Mitoli or that's really sharp, but he is, I think, the bar that you have to get to if you want to be a good horse.
What's his best quality?
Attitude. He's got a very bad attitude and likes to argue, and I think that helps him a lot down the stretch.
Yeah, you say he's a lot like you, and I always like to bring up the fact that you spent some time doing some boxing, a former boxer, as I always refer to you. So you were no stranger to throwing a knockout punch or two. Neither is Whitmore, man. When he puts in that stretch run, it's on.
Yeah, he likes to have competition. He loves it whenever they're banging around. If someone bangs into him, that makes him mad, and he comes harder. And a lot of horses, and I've had some that they get knocked off stride or get banged around a little bit, and they fold up and they get upset, or where that makes him that much more ready to go.
Some horses start to tail off as they get later in their career, and Whitmore has shown no signs of slowing down. He comes out of that big win in the Hot Springs at Oaklawn on March 7th, drew off to win by more than two lengths that day. Why does he continue to just get better as he ages, or at least stay as good as he's ever been?
I think because the distance isn't hard on him. I think it's an easy distance for him, or easier. He's by pleasantly perfect out of a Scat Daddy mare. I mean, nothing about that really says sprint. The pedigree says that he ought to go a route of ground, but he's so big and muscular with this air capacity, and whenever he runs it short, even if he goes 108 and change or whatever the speed is that day, it's always been amazing to me how quickly he cools out walking towards the test barn. He catches his breath. In the Breeders' Cup when we were second, he was cooled out. The horse that won was huffing and puffing and took him forever to catch his breath. And he, we were cooled out before we got there.
Have you been able to be around him much, Ron, with a lot of the restrictions? And I know some of your health issues that you were dealing with. Have you been able to be around the barn and around Whitmore that much?
Yeah, I have to be, super, super careful and sneaky about it. But, and I'm lucky in the fact that 15 years ago I bought a piece of land right beside the track in Lisbon, and I can hear my barn. So even if I can't go to the barn, I walk into my driveway and I can watch every horse of mine train, talk to the riders, and I get to do things a little bit unconventional right now, but I'm still rolling right around. I still get to do everything that I love to do. So it's just got to be a little more cautious right now.
was it TVG or maybe NBC that had shown that picture of you kind of leaned up against the fence on the backside of Oaklawn, if I'm not mistaken, and watching the horses from a bit of a distance?
Yeah, that's my yard, and that fence there is what separates our property. And whenever the riders are warming up for the three quarters, I can go there and I can talk to Santana or Rosario or Talamo, whoever's riding for me. I can give them the instructions right there as they're walking towards the gates.
And, so what instructions will you shout to Joe Talamo today?
Well, obviously, we've been having conversations all week, so all I'll do is, you know, offer some sort of encouragement, like "you the man" or something. I'm not gonna cloud his mind. I'm just gonna, you know, tell him that you know, this is his track. He's won seven sprint races here, and you know, four hot spring stakes in a row. And we would love to get the third Count Fleet, and that'd be something else that would make it historical for us. And, you know, to do it here in our backyard would be awesome.
Other than running faster than every other horse in the race, what's it going to take? I guess what's the key to victory for Whitmore in the Count Fleet this afternoon?
Well, we have to get a good trip. We know that we have as much ability as any horse in the race. But the thing that's the hardest to describe to people is that you've got a lot of horses with just a little bit of ability difference, and sometimes a trip can mean the difference between winning and running, you know, or not winning. So all I want is for everybody to get a good trip, everyone to get the trip that they think gives them the best shot to win and come home safely, and I think that puts us in the mix, you know.
Talking with trainer Ron Moquette here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, getting ready to saddle 7-year-old Whitmore in today's Count Fleet Sprint Handicap at Oaklawn. Again, this would be a third victory in the race for him if he could pull it off. No horse has ever won three renewals of the Count Fleet, so Ron mentions the historic aspect. It would be historic for the horse. It would also be historic for Ron. And Ron, I don't know if you realize this or not, but if you can pull off a victory here, it would be your third as well. You would join Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen and Bill Sparr as the only trainers ever to win this race three times.
That'd be pretty cool. That's some good company. Asmussen has a whole lot of records here. And, you know, he's got a lot of bullets to fire, and he's pretty accurate with them. So anytime you can get in that echelon of names, you feel like you're doing your job.
What's the plan for Whitmore for 2020? I know it's hard to probably say because there's a lot of uncertainty with the racing schedule now, but in an ideal world, where would you like to see this end up for him at the end of 2020? Breeders' Cup?
Yeah, we have two races scheduled right now. We have the Count Fleet and the Breeders' Cup. Now, we would like to think that there's a possibility we could run in the Phoenix, and we'd like to think there's a possibility we could run somewhere else, but, you know, we're going to do whatever's best for Whitmore based on what's available. And, you know, I always tell people that being a trainer is knowing horses is one thing, but then figuring out a way to adapt every day. And this year, everyone has had to adapt, and our business is no different. So we're just going to adapt and see what's the best course for us to get to our ultimate goal, which is the Breeders' Cup.
Well, Ronnie, you do it as good as anybody, and all the best with Whitmore later this afternoon, and stay safe, stay healthy down there in Arkansas, and we'll look forward to hopefully seeing you back up here in Kentucky before too long, my friend.
Can't wait.
All right, appreciate it, brother. Good luck today. Ron Moquette here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to get Ron a gift, courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. And don't forget, you can do that now. You're sitting at home, many of us confined to our houses for the most part. Go to EmbraceTheRace.com. Log on now. It's a great way to order a great gift for yourself or for another horse racing fan on your list. You can do that at EmbraceTheRace.com. Yeah, Whitmore, such a cool story. And it would mean a lot. You could hear it in his voice. It would mean a lot for Ronnie to equal Steve Asmussen and Bill Spahr in that race. But it would mean, I think, even more for Whitmore to sit atop the list as the only horse ever to win three runnings of the Count Fleet. And no Mattoli to contend with this year. So we'll see if he can pull it off later today in that Count Fleet. Going to get to another break. When I come back, it's your Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, a special Industry Star again this week. And then I'll get you set for hour number two. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown.
Power.
Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pole. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainsway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4/5, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half-brother to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu, Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire, and buyers agree. At the recently concluded OBS March sale, a two-year-old colt by Anchor Down breezed in 9 4/5 seconds, selling for $270,000 to John Ford. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksandSeafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
They're a furlong from the finish, and Plum Pretty's in cruise control. Absent Minded did her best, could not keep up. Tiz Miss Sue outside of her. Plum Pretty dominating in the Apple Blossom. What a classy filly and a dynamic comeback. Wow.
Kentucky Oaks winner Plum Pretty, the daughter of Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro, who also won at the highest level as a four-year-old, including that triple-digit buyer victory in the 2012 running of the Apple Blossom Handicap. And that win makes Plum Pretty your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro, the sire of 25 Grade 1 winners, and only Mr. Prospector can equal his 7 American Grade 1 winners in a single year. Learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
They're coming to the top of the stretch, and Blushing John is under a hand rod. He leads by length and a half. Sunday Silence, a threatening presence on the outside. Easy Goer is sent down, and he's put to a fierce drive. Coming to the final furlong, Sunday Silence surges to the front. Blushing John trying to fight back. Easy Goer with one final acceleration, and Sunday Silence holds on, and he wins by a desperate neck. Easy Goer was too late, not enough to win it, and it was Sunday Silence in a racing epic.
Well said. Tom Durkin with the call of the 1989 Breeders' Cup Classic. Sunday Silence holding off Easy Goer. And what a moment that was in our sport. Going to be joined by Arthur Hancock from Stone Farm to look back on the career of Sunday Silence. Sunday Silence, part of our Fantasy Derby field coming up on May 2nd. He is among the 20 horses competing in our Fantasy Derby. We'll have that full broadcast for you, 5 to 6 Eastern on May 2nd. Larry Colmus, the voice of NBC, is going to have the call for us, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to bring you that coverage here on HRN. Time now for our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, and nobody better than Dora Delgado from Breeders' Cup to join me here this morning. She is the Executive Vice President and the Chief Racing Officer of that organization, and Breeders' Cup is our Industry Star of the Week. They have been doing some amazing things, not on the racing side of things necessarily, but to help folks here in the Lexington community dealing with COVID-19. So I thought it was appropriate that we make Breeders' Cup this week's Industry Star of the Week. Dora, good morning.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well, and congratulations on being named the Industry Star, not just you, but the entire team at Breeders' Cup. Tell me about some of the things that you've been doing over the course of the past week or so.
Sure. We've been looking for ways we could help. One of the first things we did initially was to say, we have all of this quarantine equipment in our warehouse because many people might not know this, but we set up an equine quarantine every year at Breeders' Cup to bring in internationals. So the handlers of those horses have to have those Tyvek suits and face covers and shoe covers and all of this. So we had a fairly large amount of PPE just sitting in the warehouse. So we made that donation to the state of Kentucky this week. And then in addition to that, we wanted to do something meaningful to the backstretch communities because they've been so hard hit. And in particular in New York, where the food banks are just running so short. So we made a donation of $25,000. It's an initial donation. We hope to get more to these people in need very soon.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of people not knowing about the quarantine setup. And, of course, I knew about the quarantine. I didn't realize that there was so much personal protective equipment that was involved on the quarantine side of things that is now coming into play to help people with COVID-19. I had no idea. That's pretty cool.
Exactly. You know, the same rules apply. When a horse is imported into this country, it has to be in quarantine for 42 hours while we test its blood and its temperatures and make sure that they haven't brought any infectious diseases into the country inadvertently. So the people that then have to handle those horses during that period also have to be, wear the protective equipment so not only they don't carry it outside the barn and possibly to other animals, but to protect themselves as well.
Yeah, it's a special thing that you and the team are doing, and hats off to everyone at Breeders' Cup for forward thinking and getting all of that done and getting that equipment into the hands of those who need it as we continue to battle the coronavirus here throughout the Bluegrass and across the country. The other part of the announcement that came out this week, Dora, and I'll give you a second to talk about this, is that Breeders' Cup fully committed to running the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland on the dates that are currently scheduled, November 6th and 7th.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are fully committed to running the event. We're working with state and local government along with Keeneland to make sure that event is allowed to happen. We're working very hard and very diligently to develop best practices. As you know, many states, many governments right now are working, on the plan forward on how to reopen the countries and getting America back to work, getting the horse community back to racing. So it's definitely, something that our whole team works on every day. We're all working from home now. So, thank God for the internet because we have daily meetings, daily conference calls, all working towards these plans to take the event and protect the spectators and the participants that come to the event.
Yeah, nobody knows for sure if that date is going to be a date that will work. We don't know where we're going to be November 6th and 7th with this whole situation here in the States and around the world. If indeed that date would not work, Breeders' Cup coming out and telling folks, hey, don't hesitate to buy tickets because we will refund any money that you spend on tickets if we have to cancel the event. And I thought that was a great move to come out and let people know that now.
You know, people were, honestly, they weren't stopping buying tickets during this whole time, but we did want to reassure them if they had any hesitations at all. Obviously, if we can't have spectators, everything is fully refunded. So, you might as well go and secure the best seats possible right now while they're available. And then if we can't run the event with spectators or we can't run the event at all, everything is 100% refundable.
What does this do for the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series, Dora?
Well, it's interesting because we've been waiting to see where our racetrack partners are going to reschedule races if they have to. But our first Breeders' Cup Challenge race doesn't kick off until May. So we're still on track. Santa Anita has the Shoemaker Mile, followed then by the Mutt Mile at Belmont on June. So those tracks are definitely not, have not given us an alternate date yet. So we're going to kind of play that by ear as those dates get moved. Some races may come completely off the schedule and they're just not going to be rescheduled this year. And then some, you know, just maybe push back a few weeks or a month or so. So right now we haven't been impacted by not having an opportunity to do their races. Ascot, I believe, is you know, they're planning on going ahead with the meet, even though they won't have spectators. And I imagine that's going to be the case for a lot of our racetracks that have these early races in the program.
Well, Dora, I know that you and the team are dealing with an awful lot of things, as most people are, but keep up the great work. And my thanks to you and to the entire team for what you're doing to help people here in the community battle the coronavirus. Well done, and congratulations on being named the Industry Star of the Week.
Thanks, Mike, so much. And if I could just do a shout-out, we're doing a Thursday Eve Cocktails and Conversation online every Thursday where we have a mixologist and a leading person in the industry. It's a lot of fun, just some conversation for people to tune in and donate to the very much-needed backstretch and COVID relief funds. Thanks so much.
Dora, wait. I'm doing Cocktails and Conversation every night. I'm not waiting till Thursday. Well, I'm on lockdown here. I'm doing it every night.
I think everybody's joining you.
All right. Appreciate it, Dora. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. And that segment, of course, brought to you by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. His success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. Visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all the major sales. All right, going to come back with a busy second half of the program. It kicks off with Arthur Hancock from Stone Farm, looking back on Sunday's silence. Carl Nasker will be with me to remember Unbridled, and Hall of Famer Mike Smith toward the end of the show. I'm back with more right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming real quiet. He's a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One wheel. Looked impossible.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
On the inside, unaccounted for. On the outside, Solo the Manor. And here he is, the incomparable, invincible, unbeatable Cigar.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Foal is finally the one. American Foal has won the Triple Crown.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum rolling on. A very busy show for you here this morning. If you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this show and all of our shows after we wrap it up here at 10 a.m. Eastern Time this morning. Tom Amos and Ron Moquette with me in the first half of the program, as well as Dora Delgado from Breeders' Cup, as that organization named our Industry Star of the Week for this Saturday morning. Going to be joined by Arthur Hancock to look back on the career of Sunday Silence coming up in just a couple of minutes. Carl Nasker with me at 9:20 Eastern Time to talk about Unbridled and remember him. It was 30 years ago that Unbridled won the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic in a year that Carl was named champion trainer. And then Hall of Famer Mike Smith at 9:40 Eastern Time. So a lot of things to get to. It's going to be a fun second half of the show. Our poll question today at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and so many of you are actually emailing the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. You can do that. I want to hear from you. In honor of today's apple blossom at Oaklawn Park, who is your all-time favorite filly or mare? In honor of today's apple blossom at Oaklawn Park, who is your all-time favorite filly or mare? And the answers are coming in fast and furious. Of course, I told you mine was Excellent Meeting, who was so brilliant in her career. Bill chimes in, and let's see, Bill in New York chimes in and says that, I hope I pronounce it correctly, Suntika, going back to a historic one, going back to the Latonia Oaks in 1932. I love it. That's old school. Here's a vote for Silver Bullet Day. I'm sure there'll be plenty of people who chime in for Silver Bullet Day because she was pretty special. Roman Rachel, another good one. Owned by Will Ferris, trained by Shug McGahee. I like that choice. How about Panty Raid? Yeah, I remember that horse. Let's see. Those are the ones I've received in the email. There are others coming in. Lady Secret, Teppin, Paradise Woods, Azari. And of course, Mike Smith going to look back on Azari coming back as he won the Apple Blossom three times with her. He'll join me 9:40 to do that. Goldakova. How can you forget about Goldakova? Can't believe I haven't seen one for Zenyatta yet. Here's Rachel, Cashier's Dream. Tammy Price. Interesting. Ran a number of years at Aix-Arbonne. I like that. Another one for Rachel with Monomoy Girl a close second. There's Zenyatta. Zenyatta gets a vote. Winx, Beholder. Yeah. the beautiful Beholder. Spain, Songbird, Landalusi, and Ruffian. Another one that gets a vote here. So cool stuff. Keep them coming. Who is your favorite filly or mare all time? And you can do that at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know that way. Well, I told you that Sunday Silence was going to be among the 20 horses that are scheduled to compete in our Fantasy Derby field. And because there was no Derby on the first Saturday in May this year, we would normally be there to bring you that radio coverage. We are going to produce a full one-hour broadcast from 5 to 6 Eastern on Saturday, May 2nd, of a Fantasy Derby, and we asked you to select the 20 horses you thought should be in the field. 9 of the 13 Triple Crown winners made the cut, as did Sunday Silence, who was owned by Arthur Hancock and Stone Farm, and Arthur is with me now to look back on that memorable year in 1989 with Sunday Silence, who took the Kentucky Derby, who took the Preakness, and the Breeders' Cup Classic. Arthur, good morning. Appreciate the visit.
Hey, Mike. Good morning. How are you today?
Things are great. You know, when you hear the name Sunday Silence all these years later, what are some of the first things that come to mind?
Well, just what a great horse he was and how much he meant to the family. And, you know, he came along when times were really hard and we had, you know, gotten in a lot of debt and the market had, you know, gone from what was worth a dollar to worth 30 cents. And, but just as an individual, you know, I remember the day he was born. I remember the Thanksgiving when he had some kind of strange colitis. He was the only foal on the farm that had it. And the veterinarian was about 1 o'clock and he'd given him 22 liters of fluids. And I remember he said, "You little SOB, if you're going to die, go ahead and die." And he just wouldn't give up. And I mean, it looked, you know, it was a weird thing. And he was so sick and had terrible diarrhea. But watching him all that Thanksgiving morning and just the courage he had, you know, he was like a light from out, you know, maybe this sounds too poetic, but kind of a light from out of the universe. He had such courage and, you know, we raised him up as a yearling and just to be around him, I mean, was a gift in itself, you know, just the, I mean, he was a unique creature.
Yeah, and the heart that he showed, even as a young horse on the farm, battling through those health issues, certainly served him well on the racetrack, too. 14 starts, 9 wins, 5 seconds. That's unbelievable. Never worse than second. He earned $4.9 million in his career. And take me back to that day in 1989 at Churchill Downs, Arthur. May 6th, he comes home first in the Kentucky Derby. Look back on that day, and what comes to mind?
Well, I was so nervous, and I remember it was about 36 degrees, and it was spitting snow, and you know, rain and sleet, and we were freezing out there, and you know, we were up against the mighty Easy Gore. I mean, he was touted to be the next Man of War, and I was fully prepared to, you know, get beat, but I tell you, I had some confidence because I think it was on a Tuesday or Tuesday, Charlie breezed the horse and he went a half in 46, and I bet you 15 or 20 reporters came up and asked Charlie, said, well, Charlie, did he go too fast? And because it was a really good work, and Charlie said, no, he did just what we wanted. And but a lot of people were skeptical, and they said, well, he went too fast. You know, he left his race in that work. And on the way back to the barn, I said, what do you think, Charlie? You think he went too fast? He said, hell no. He said, a good horse can do that. And I said, well, are you pleased then? What do you think, Charlie? He looked at me. He had those twinkling blue eyes, you know, and he said, my boy, we will get the money. And I said, Charlie, you really think we can beat Easy Gore? He looked at me. You know, he was a Marine. He was a tough guy. And he looked at me and that expression in his eyes, and he said, my boy, we will get the money. And so I had that in mind the day of the Derby. And, you know, like I say, we're sitting there shaking. I remember with the binoculars, it was cold, and nerves, too. You know, I mean, so much depended on it financially and just everything else. And, you know, we were up against Mr. Phipps, who was my dad's, you know, good friend and Claiborne's best client, and a lot of emotion there. And it was scary, really. But it was like I've never been in a battle in a war, but it's sort of like maybe you'd feel if you went into that, except you're not going to get shot or anything. But I just remember being real nervous, and then it all happened, you know.
Yeah, how about the feeling when you watched him cross the finish line in front?
I didn't, you know, I really didn't expect to win. I didn't expect that we'd beat this horse, because this Easy Gore was really, really a great horse. And I just regress a minute. I went in Louie's restaurant one day, several months before that, back in the fall, and my brother Seth was in there, and I said, hey, Seth, how you doing? And I had talked to Charlie that morning. Charlie said, this horse we got, he said, he can really run. This is a good horse, Arthur. And I said to Seth, this was back, I guess, in the summer, or maybe July, August, something like that, maybe September. But I said, this is a real good horse we got out there. I got out there with Charlie. And Seth said, well, that's too bad. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, Mr. Phipps has the best horse he's ever had. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, just my luck. And I said, he's better than Buck Passer. He said, oh, yeah, they think he's just something else. And ironically, I had worked for the Phipps for a year after I got out of college and actually took care of Buck Passer, helped take care of him with the groom, had to walk him after his big races. But so anyway, we were going against what my brother, who's a great horseman, said was a great horse, and I know Shug thought so, and he was a great horse, and I didn't expect we'd win. And then when they were coming down the stretch and Pat hit him, you know, and he's veered, and Then he hit him another direction on the other side, and he veered. I thought, oh, God, we're going to get caught. And it all just happened so fast. It was just after it was over, I sort of incredulous. I really couldn't believe that we had won it because I knew what we were up against. And then I just was so thankful and, you know, just it's hard to describe. You feel like you could, you know, after all, you get down there, you just feel like you could walk on air. I'd heard that feeling, but I had it three times. I had it with God Odell Saul in 82, and when my children were born, I had that feeling, and when Sunday Silence won that Derby. And having gone through, you know, raising him and seeing him sick like that, and I've been around him, all he went through, you know, when we tried to sell him in California and they put him on a van and couldn't get him sold, to come back here and the van driver had a heart attack, a fatal heart attack, and died, and the van turned over, and they had to put Sunday Silence in a clinic out there for a week. And when he got back here to the farm, you know, we turned him. The veterinarian called me. I wasn't here when I was in the office when he got to the barn. And he got off the van, and the vet called and said, oh, this horse is a wobbler. He's off, you know, terribly off behind. And I thought, oh, gosh. And I said, well, all we can do is just let's give him, turn him out and see what happens. So we put him in about a 10-acre paddock. And he, you know, he was off for 3 or 4 days, and I thought, well, he's not going to make it. And I guess about a week later, the vet called me. Carl Morrison was his name, and he said, you wouldn't believe it. He said, come down here to barn 16. And I went down there, and there he was out there galloping around. I mean, it was a...
Wow.
The veterinarian's a brilliant guy. He subsequently became a medical doctor. He said he'd never seen anything like it, and I hadn't. He just like he... You know, and I'll never forget that. It was a sunny day, and he was galloping around that field. So all those things, you know, when you raise them and you're up with them 24/7 and go through all those kind of things, and you see him win the Kentucky Derby, oh, man, I mean, it's nothing. No feeling on earth like it. And, you know, we work 24/7 on these farms. It's a tough deal, but you got to love it to do it. So when he won that Derby, it was like, the best thing in the world that could happen to you, you know, it seemed like.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Arthur, I told you when we talked on the phone yesterday when I asked you to join me, and by the way, thank you for taking the time, but I told you that Sunday Silence is among the 20 horses that made the cut and got enough votes to get into our 20-horse fantasy Derby field. So looking forward to seeing how he fares against 9 of the 13 Triple Crown winners, the filly winning colors. That field is as salty as they come. And you told me that you think he probably wins it.
Well, that's probably – that may be because I loved him. And, you know, it's like your son or something. And maybe that's pride of ownership. I know that those other horses are all great horses. But I'd say something that Charlie said. I quote him directly, he said, this son of a bitch is a fighter. He said, he won't give up. And that's the way Sunday Silence was. And this is the way I look at it. He beat Easy Gore, who was probably one of the greatest horses of all time. Had it not been for Sunday Silence, Easy Gore would probably be spoken of in the same breath as Man of War around here in Kentucky, because that's what he was hyped up to be, and he was. But we were just, you know, a little bit better, and were able to beat him. So I would go back, and I don't know this, but all those other horses, they were great horses that are in this hypothetical Derby, but I'd say, who did they beat? And maybe they beat some other great horses. I know Affirmed beat Alidar, who was a great horse. But, you know, I think there's a lot to that. Of course, there's a lot to the luck and the race and the trip and everything. But I would just say this, if we were betting on it, I'd put my money on Sunday Silence. But that's probably pride of ownership.
Yeah, and it should be. You should defend your player like that. And Arthur Hancock with me here on HRN. Arthur, can't thank you enough for the visit here this morning. We could spend a couple hours reminiscing about Sunday Silence and all the success you've had in the business. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do that one day. But really appreciate you taking the time here this morning, my friend.
Well, thank you. And I could talk a couple of days about him, so I hope I haven't been too too talkative, but he brings out a lot of emotions, and he was a great horse, and I still thank God every day I had him.
Yeah, no, not at all, and looking forward to my next segment, too. Carl Nasker coming up to look back on Unbridled in his championship season of 1990, so should be a lot of fun.
Well, he'll probably tell you Unbridled would have won it. I guess everybody has their, you know, but as I say, you got to look at who they beat, and I what they need to do is feed this into that giant computer they got and see what it says, you know?
Yep, yep. Arthur, appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, man, take care, and thank you for calling me, and God bless, be good.
You too, stay safe. Arthur Hancock here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're sending him a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Carl Nasker and our Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift in our following segment. Stay with me. It's the Equine Forum on HRN presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-mesh horse fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation is a top 10 third crop sire by earnings, black type winners, and graded stakes winners. With nearly $7 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by six black type horses in 2019. From a second crop, three-year-old daughter Serengeti Empress won the 2019 Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks and was runner-up in both the Grade 1 Test and Acorn Stakes. Serengeti Empress finished the year with a strong third to older mares in the Breeders' Cup Distaff and is a finalist for Eclipse Champion three-year-old filly. By Distorted Humor, millionaire graded stakes winner Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your health care provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part. Because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Unbridled takes command. Summers fall in second. It's 6 lengths farther back to Pleasant Tap. Around the inside, Mr. Frisky is out of it and through the stretch and to the wire. The 116th run for the Roses goes to Unbridled with jockey Frank Perrette, winning by 4 lengths. Summers fall with second, and then 7 lengths farther back into Pleasant Tap.
Oh, Victor, I love you. Oh.
a moment, one of those moments you'll never forget in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you, getting ready to welcome Carl Nasker, who trained Unbridled to that victory in 1990 beneath the Twin Spires. That was Dave Johnson with the call, the cameras and the audio picking up that emotional moment with Frances Genter right after the race, as Carl was actually calling the race for her. Yeah, really special. She was 92 years old when she won the Kentucky Derby with Unbridled, and going to visit with Carl coming up in just a few minutes. We'll talk to him about his unbelievable three-year-old and champion Unbridled. But before we do, it is time to look at some of this year's three-year-olds with Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
Last Saturday was a day at Oaklawn Park showcasing some great three-year-old races. Let's start with the $200,000 Oaklawn Stakes, where the track was labeled sloppy and sealed. Thousand Words was looking to rebound off a subpar effort in the San Felipe Stakes, and he was sent off the mild 5-2 favorite. Tayshawn was also 5-2, in part due to his resounding allowance win on a sloppy track 4 weeks prior. Grade 1 hopeful winner Basin was the close third choice at 3-1. When the gates opened, Longshot's Gold Street, Sir Rick, and Flapjack sprinted off to ensure a fast early pace. But it was too fast, and the closers benefited greatly from it. Mr. Big News and Farmington Road, who were both about 15 lengths back early on, circled the field on the far turn and drew away from the others down the lane. Mr. Big News, whose only previous victory was by a nose in a maiden race, proved most of the bettors wrong by scoring at 46-1 and covering the mile and an eighth in 149-4 under Gabriel Saez. Farmington Road was gaining on the winner late, but drifted in and out down the stretch and had to settle for second. Tayshawn made a nice move on the turn, but flattened out late to be a distant third. The favorite Thousand Words took an awkward step at the start as both front legs splayed, causing him to stumble badly. He recovered, but never really showed his best stuff and finished far back. By winning the Oaklawn Stakes, Mr. Big News gained an automatic berth into the 2020 Preakness Stakes. The top three finishers, Mr. Big News, Farmington Road, and Tayshawn, all are guaranteed spots in the Arkansas Derby at Oaklawn Park on May 2nd. The other 11 available spots in the starting gate will be given out to the entered three-year-olds with the most career earnings. Another three-year-old to watch carefully is the Steve Asmussen trainee, Pneumatic. He's undefeated, 2-for-2, and looked awesome winning a one-mile allowance race earlier on the Oaklawn card. It looks like he can run all day. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Spendthrift Farms' popular Safe Bet program is back for 2020, featuring freshman sires Brody's Cause, Cinco Charlie, and Hit It A-Bomb. Breed to one of these stallions and watch their first crop of two-year-olds have greatest stakes success on the racetrack this year, or you won't owe the stud fee when your foal is born in 2021. To learn more about the Safe Bet program, visit SpendthriftFarm.com/safebet or call the farm today. That's SpendthriftFarm.com/safebet. Spendthrift, the breeder's farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Numbers 1 and 2, Authentic and Honor AP, the 1-2 finishers in the San Felipe Stakes, both looking for their next starts. Number 3, Tis the Law, winner of the Florida Derby, could be on track for the Arkansas Derby on May 2nd. Numbers 4 and 5, Maxfield and Charlatan, also both possible for the Arkansas Derby. We haven't seen Maxfield since last year as a two-year-old. Charlatan, 2-for-2 and undefeated as he looks to step into stakes competition. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
All right, well, those are some of the stars of today. In a moment, I'm going to visit with Hall of Fame trainer Carl Nasker to look back on a star from 30 years ago, Unbridled in 1990, swept the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic that year, and it was a year in which Carl was named champion trainer. He won the Eclipse Award that year as the champion trainer. Of course, he'll look back on 92-year-old Miss Genter, who was with him at Churchill Downs. I told you that story as we were coming out of that last commercial break. Really special moment, and looking forward to visiting with Carl coming up here in just a little bit. Don't forget that our Fantasy Derby comes up May 2nd. I know I keep telling you about it, but it's going to be special. If you haven't had a chance to go to our website yet and check it out, horseracingradio.com fantasyderby.com/fantasyderby is the page. All 20 horses competing in the Fantasy Derby are listed there. It's a salty, stellar field, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll draw post positions on this program next Saturday. We'll set the morning line for you, and we will handicap that race as if we were actually going to bet it. You can do that. You can tune into this show next week to hear all of that information. Carl Nasker is with me now. I told you 30 years ago, it was, a special year to say the least. And Carl, first of all, good morning. Thank you for taking a little time.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning, Mike?
I am very well, and I really appreciate you joining me here. I was telling folks that if they haven't done it in a while, and I know I hadn't, but as I was getting ready for the program, I went back and watched the video of you and Frances Genter together as you're calling the race for her coming down the stretch at Churchill Downs with Unbridled. And I have to tell you, Carl, I get chills every time I watch it. What a special moment.
Well, she was a special lady. That's what you got to understand, Michael. She was everything you seen on that video that day. That's what she was. She was everybody's mother or grandmother, and she was a wonderful lady. It was a lot of fun just training for her.
What do you remember about the moment that you, when the television cameras captured you and Miss Genter together and you're calling the race? What do you remember about that particular moment?
Well, if y'all know the truth, we didn't even know what happened until Wednesday of the following week, okay? We went after the Derby. Of course, you went to the press conference and then into the museum, and they kept showing the race, but they said, what you did on TV is unbelievable. And I said, what did I do? Because, see, this will never happen again, Mike. Because everybody knows we're mic'd and everybody knows you're on television now. Yep. I only ended up on television because Oscar Barrera or the trainer of the – damn it, I can't think of the guy's name, and he's Neil Howard.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't wear it. They didn't want to wear the mic. And I happened to know through roundabout ways I knew – the ABC producer, Kurt Dowdy Jr., and he said, would you wear this thing? We're trying something new. And he said, we won't come to you until, you know, when I was supposed to answer a question with McKay and Jim. And then I did that, and I put the thing away, and that was it, I thought. And nobody could – there's a long story behind all of this. So I said, put Ms. Genter by me, and I'll call the race to her because I'll know where he is and what's going on. So that's how it all ended up. And we'd never seen it until a friend had us over, put a glass of wine in my hand, said, now watch, and turned on the old VHS. They had it set on the post-parade, and they showed, and then they showed the race and that. And that's the first time I seen it. It was on Wednesday after the Derby.
Well, thank goodness you agreed to wear that microphone, because that is one of the more special moments that you're ever going to see in any sport. Forget about just horse racing, but in any sport. And that when he finally crossed the finish line, you turned to her, you gave her a kiss, you gave her a hug, and it was just this outpouring of true emotion, which, you know, most people that win the Kentucky Derby, that's the reaction that you get. But this was to a different level, Carl.
Well, like I said, Ms. Genter was everybody's mother or grandmother to me and everybody. And I said, I love you, Ms. Genter. I meant it. And to win it for her after all those years in horse racing, I'd said earlier in the week, people had asked me, they said, well, what about this Derby? Are you nervous? I said, well, if I ever win one Derby, I wanted to be this one on account of Ms. Genter. And then when it happened, well, and another, everybody knows their mic, so it was all spontaneous of what you really felt. It wasn't any show, it wasn't any put on, it wasn't, you know, it was a raw moment of, and she happened to be, this, like I said, the lady, she was everybody's mother or grandmother, yeah.
visiting with Hall of Fame trainer Carl Nafsker here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, looking back on that moment when Unbridled crossed the finish line first beneath the Twin Spires. Hard to believe it's been 30 years since Unbridled pulled it off. Carl, you mentioned how much you love Miss Genter. How much did you love Unbridled?
Well, Unbridled, we called him the gentle giant. He actually had Kirk Gowdy's twin daughters. They actually rode him around the shed row. We led him, of course. But he loved kids. He was big, 17 hands. I think ended up, he was like 16-3. And we called him the gentle giant. He was so kind, so nice. I mean, you cannot believe how nice a horse he was. And just to have a horse that'll take you to the Derby and take care of you and take you through. The first time we'd ever even been to the Derby, Wanda and I, and then to win it, and that was all on account of Unbridled. And then everybody should know what he went on and done, you know, as he became a stallion, what kind of sire he made. He's a foundation sire now.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And what he did even later in that season, going on and winning the Breeders' Cup Classic at Belmont Park, beating the older horses that day. What do you remember about that particular day, Carl?
Great relief. Yeah. Michael, I don't know if you read the book. I explained in the book why, the second book we've written called Why. And it's about horse racing, about everything, life, everything. Anyway, it explains coming back and winning the Classic was one of the strongest, most emotional moments I ever had, because there was so much controversy going up to it, and I won't go into all the details. But it was, when I won it, it was like, it was just godsend. It was unbelievable, yes.
Yeah, it was a special moment indeed, and no doubt about it. And, again, you can go ahead and check out the book. I would highly recommend it. All of the stories and the reasons behind everything in that book, talking with Carl Nafsker, Hall of Fame trainer. Carl, that was also the year that you won the Eclipse Award as the champion trainer. That had to be special for you, too.
Oh, yes. It was. I had missed it as a bull rider. I'd been third, but I had never won the world. And when I was up for Trainer of the Year, I told Wanda. I said, "Wanda, I'm nervous." She said, "You're more nervous than I ever seen you." I said, "Well, I want to." I said, "I believe the bull ride deal." I said, "I want to win the." I said, "I just hope we get the Eclipse Award," and which was a great honor. And then racing's been good to me. I can never knock racing for what it's done for Wanda and I, and the highs, the lows, the friends you meet, the road you take, and anybody that works with horses can just feel there's something there that you won't find anywhere else. And like I told a person here the other day, I said, training horses is a lot of fun. Being a horse trainer is hell sometimes with all the book work, but I said, it's good.
Yeah. No, wait a minute now, Carl, you're living the good life now. I know you told me last night when you called me and told me you'd be able to join me on the program that you were going to have to set your alarm to get up for a 9:20 interview. Usually the day's over for you by 9:20.
No, I did. I said I set the alarm so I remember it.
Carl Nafsker with me here on HRRN. Carl, what's it like to be a member of multiple Hall of Fames?
Well, it's a lot of, first, you, like I said at the Hall of Fame in Saratoga, I said, first is, oh boy, I'm in the Hall of Fame. Wow, well, look what that. And then it hits you, the responsibility that you represent the PBR, Rodeo Cowboys, and horse racing, and you represent this. And I said, then the responsibility hits you, makes you stop and really think of the honor it is to be there, the appreciation you feel for everybody that backed you, and for the sport itself. And It's an honor. It's a great honor. I mean, I don't think words can ever be put together that will completely explain how you really feel when it really sinks in and what's really happening to you.
Well, Carl, it's always an honor to have you join me here on the program. And, again, can't thank you enough for spending some time here this morning reminiscing. Always great to look back on Unbridled and Miss Genter. And you're all class, my friend. So enjoy the rest of the day. Stay safe. Stay healthy. And, again, thank you for joining me.
Okay. Thank you a lot. Thank you, Mike. Enjoy it.
Carl Nassar here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Like all of our guests, we're going to send him a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, and he is all class. One of the guys that represents, if you want an ambassador for thoroughbred racing, there's a lot of people you can choose. Carl Nassar, he's right at the top of the list. And his recollection and that story he told about Miss Genter and being mic'd up. And if you missed it, if you're just joining me and you missed it, go back and listen to that interview on the podcast. Phenomenal. Outstanding. Great stuff from Carl Nassar. Another pretty good Hall of Famer and great ambassador for the sport coming up next. That's Hall of Famer Mike Smith. Yeah, he's going to get up early and join me from California. We'll talk to him next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Eclipse champion Blame. Ranked among the top stallions of his crop, Blame has sired over 50 stakes horses. His recent top performers include Kentucky Derby hopefuls Shotsky, winner of the Grade 2 Remsen Stakes, and rising star Nadal, a $700,000 juvenile purchase and winner of the Grade 2 San Vicente. Plus, recent Grade 1 performers Mississippi, Alandra, and Natalma Stakes winner Abscond. Outstanding value, outstanding results. Blame, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Adina Springs bred, raced, and developed Awesome Again and Ghost Sapper into important stallions. Now comes Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, bred, raced, and backed by the strength of Adina. A Hall of Fame runner like his sire and grandsire, Shaman Ghost captured the classic Queen's Plate at 3 en route to his Sovereign Award championship. At ages 4 and 5, Shaman Ghost made cross-country history as the only horse in the past 30 years to capture both the Woodward Stakes and Santa Anita Handicap.
Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
Shaman Ghost would go on to earn over $3.8 million with repeated success at the highest level. Additional graded wins include the Grade 2 Brooklyn Invitational, the Marine Stakes, and Pimlico Special, before defeating the likes of Keen Ice and California Chrome, went second to Arrogate in the inaugural $16 million Pegasus World Cup. Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, standing at Adina Springs, Kentucky. Look for his fantastic first yearlings at the sales in 2020.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Here they come into the stretch of the Apple Blossom Handicap. Take charge, Lady the Leader. Champion Azaria's taking over second. Mandy's Gold is third in. Waiting for the run through the lane. It is Take Charge Lady leading at a length. Azaria digging in with a furlong to go. Take Charge Lady leads it. Azaria's trying to get to her. Take Charge Lady is strong. Azaria, the champion, trying one more time. Here she comes down the middle. The champion Azaria, and she does it. A tremendous finish.
Yeah, the late Terry Wallace with the call. Azaria, a three-time winner of the Apple Blossom at Oaklawn. She did it in 2002, 2003, and 2004. And what did she have in common in all three of those efforts? She was ridden by Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith, who has won the Apple Blossom more than any jockey in the history of the race. He's won it six times. Of course, he came back after Azaria after those three wins. His first was actually in 1994, believe it or not, with nine keys. And then he came back with three in a row with Azeri in the years that I just mentioned. He came back with Zenyatta in 2008 and then again in 2010. So I'm going to talk to Mike about those victories. And we'll talk to him a little bit about Justify, his Triple Crown winner, who is getting set to face off with, well, eight other Triple Crown winners in a field of 20 of the best Kentucky Derby winners of all time, chosen by you, our listeners, in the voting process in our Fantasy Derby presented by Claiborne Farm that comes up on May 2nd. Mike is with me now. He got up early in California to be with me. I appreciate that. Mike, as always, nice to have you on board, my friend.
Yeah, great to be on. Thank you.
Yeah, I was just going through your resume when it comes to the Apple Blossom. No jockey in history has won it more than you. And those three wins with Azeri back to back to back. Boy, what a special filly and mare she was, huh?
Well, yeah, she speaks for herself. She's got a bigger fan following than I do.
What do you remember about those three wins, Mike?
You know, the whole experience was just pretty amazing for her coming into Oakland. The whole fans, the way they would gather at the airport when she'd land, and they'd all follow her back to the track, and it was pretty cool each and every time, man. They would all gather around, and on the little route on the way back to the track, people had their signs out, welcome to Oakland, and it was a pretty special time.
You've been aboard so many good fillies. You won it a couple of times with Zenyatta, too. We'll talk to you about that in a minute, but... Azeri, she was Zenyatta before there was Zenyatta. Is that a good way to say it?
Yes, yeah, it sure was. She was special in her own right. I think she won it, two times in a row, something like that? Two or three times in a row or so.
Three. You know, and when she won it that first time, it wasn't like she was running against a bunch of slouches. She won it. She beat Miss Linda, who was ridden by Richie Migliori. She beat Spain and Pat Day that afternoon, and you know, she did it in such game fashion that you had to be thinking, all right, this is a special filly that I need to stick around and be on.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the Apple Blossom always attracts probably your best older mares in the country, and taking without Midnight Bizu being there today. I mean, otherwise it would have been the Breeders' Cup just there all over again, probably.
Yeah, what is it with you and these fillies and mares that you keep getting on? I mean, they all turn out to be champions. You got away with the ladies.
I tell you what, I've been so blessed. It seems like every time I think I ride a mare, you know, that I think, well, I'll never come across another one like that. Well, then, you know, here pops up another one, and then another one, and another one, and again, just been so very blessed. I mean, if you go back and probably look at my record, you know, most of my great wins were on mares.
Yeah. Yeah, the second time that Azeri won the Apple Blossom, she ran down Take Charge Lady in the shadow of the wire, and it looked like she was going to get beat, and somehow she found enough courage to get up and win by a head. Do you remember that stretch run?
Yeah, I sure do. She was coming off, I think, might have been her first race back, I think, off of a long layoff, if I remember right. Take Charge Later, I mean, a lady, she wound up running a race that, you know, I certainly wasn't expecting her to run like that. I don't know if anyone was, to be honest with you, but she in her own right was a great, great mare, and it took all we had that day to get by her. I remember, as a matter of fact, it took all the way up, probably up until the last jump to get to her, and then after that, well, there, you know, went on to do a lot of great things again after that.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned before when we were calling you, I don't know if you were on the line yet, but I mentioned your first win in the Apple Blossom, the first of those record six wins, came in 1994 with a filly by the name of Nine Keys, who was trained by Angel Pena Jr.
Angel
for Lazy
Pena,
F
yeah.
Ranch. Yeah, do you remember her?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't forget any of them. she was a really good mare herself. I mean, we never really got to see how great she could have been, but she was... She won the right ones when we did run her in them. I tell you that she was special.
Yeah, and then your last two with Zenyatta in 2008, and again in 2010, and we know what, you know, how special Zenyatta was. But those efforts in the Apple Blossom, again, right up there with the best efforts that she's ever had.
Oh, especially that the very first time that I think the very first time I rode her was in the Apple Blossom, I believe it was. And if you go back and look at the field, I mean that was some field. I think there were probably two or three in there that turned out to be champions.
Yeah, it's special. Talking to Hall of Famer Mike Smith here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, I told you that we are putting together this Fantasy Derby broadcast, and we're going to focus on 20 of the greatest Kentucky Derby winners of all time that were voted on by our listeners and by industry folks. Justify made the list, as you can imagine, your Triple Crown winner. Now he has to take on the likes of American Pharoah and Secretariat and Seattle Slough and Northern Dancer and Citation and some of the greatest horses we've ever seen. If you're going into a race like that and you're going to prepare to face off with those types of horses, what's your preparation going to be like with Justify?
It's going to be like it always was. I mean, going into the race, Bob had left no stone unturned. I mean, he had got in, for a horse that was so lightly raced, he'd gotten him ready so good, so well. He was such an intelligent horse. On top of having the ability that he had, he was a great gate horse for as big as he was. He was really good at, leaving the gate and getting himself into a good position. And I would probably pretty much do the same thing. You'd hope to get away well, especially with, those kind of horses, and get yourself into a place where you think you need to be and a place that you feel it's comfortable for him, So where that would be with that bunch, man, it's hard to say. I'm sure the pace would be pretty quick.
Would Justify beat Secretariat?
Well, we'd have to wait and see. I don't know. It'd be hard to say. I wasn't around during that time. I never got to ride Secretariat. But he was my Secretariat, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's always so cool when we think about, even in other sports, which team was better than another team. And, was it Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant? Was it Jack Nicklaus or Tiger Woods? I mean, all of these things are so cool to kind of talk about. So I'm looking forward to this broadcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's really great, but, the thing about it is, in their time, they were the best. No one was going to beat Secretary during that time, and, of course, no one beat, Justify during his time. So it's just, it was their time. Everyone deserves a time, and they certainly got theirs.
Yeah, visiting with Hall of Famer Mike Smith here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, what are you up to now out there in California? Fill people in.
Not a whole lot to be up to, really. I get up in the morning, I'll go for a run. It's about all you can do. Come back and watch a little TV, have a little lunch, and then I usually go out for a bike ride just before dinner, and then come back, have dinner, watch some more TV, and then start all over again. There's nothing really going on, but we're all doing well here. Everyone seems to be doing pretty good, and so far so good. And good Lord's willing, we'll get back to normal sooner than later, hopefully.
Yeah, you've been, doing this a long time, Mike, and you've had so much success, and your resume speaks for itself. But how much longer are we going to see Hall of Famer Mike Smith in the saddle?
Well, hopefully this will be over soon, and you'll get me in pretty soon. I'd love to ride another few years. I think I've stayed in good enough shape. Like I've always said, if I'd done anything right early on in my career, it was taking up physical fitness and so starting to really pay off in my later years. I mean, I'm 54 and I feel like a kid. I still can do the same kind of workouts that I could do, 10 years ago. And as long as I can continue to do that, then I'll keep giving it. I'll keep going. I'm having more fun now, to be honest with you, than I did early on. I'm just, I'm so blessed just to get the opportunity to ride some of these great horses that I'm riding. I don't ride near as many as I used to ride anymore, but, again, just really blessed to be riding for top trainers and really good horses. And as long as I can keep doing that, well, I'm going to keep going as long as I can. But I would say another 2 to 3 years I would have any if all goes well.
Yeah, I was joined by Edgar Prado on the show a few weeks ago, and he was talking about that same thing. And he said, it's the feeling that you get when you win a race, not even a greatest stakes race necessarily, but that thrill of winning a race that makes you want to just – keep going, and it becomes like a drug. And I've had John Velasquez tell me the same thing. It's really like that, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. I mean, the competition is a drug in itself. But then now that we've been kind of sitting around, I mean, I you truly get back to what you started, why you started in the first place, and this is for the love of the horse. And I to be honest with you, I'm missing just getting on a horse right now. It's so bad. I just want to get a chance to get back and like get back to what I love to do and get back on a horse. And when you can ride on the back of a horse for your job, well, there's nothing better, let me tell you.
Well, Mike, I said earlier in the program that much like my earlier guests, Carl Nasker and a guy like Arthur Hancock from Stone Farm, that they are great ambassadors for the sport, and you are too, my friend. Nobody better to get out here and promote our sport, and you're all class. So I appreciate the visit here this morning. Thanks for getting up early, as always, and stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll look forward to seeing you back on a horse very, very soon.
Amen. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Mike Smith here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Going to send him a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Fun stuff. I mean, really, top-class individual and having more fun now than he probably ever has. And he's getting on grade one winner after grade one winner, so why not? We'll see if Justify can beat Secretariat and Seattle Slough and all the rest of them. We'll find out coming up on May 2nd here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. One final break. We'll come back and wrap it up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Power.
Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pull. Tamar Coes can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainesway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4 fifths, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half-brother to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu, Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire, and buyers agree. At the recently concluded OVS March sale, a two-year-old colt by Anchor Down breezed in 9 4/5 seconds, selling for $270,000 to John Ford. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Basketball has Michael Jordan. Hockey has Wayne Gretzky. But which thoroughbred racehorse is the GOAT? Find out Saturday, May 2nd at 5 p.m. Eastern on the HRRN Fantasy Derby, presented by Claiborne Farm. This once-in-a-lifetime fantasy race will pit the 20 best Derby winners against each other in a race to determine who is the greatest of all time. Featuring a full broadcast with HRRN's Eclipse Award-winning team and a live race call from NBC track announcer Larry Colmus. The HRRN Fantasy Derby will finally settle the argument, which horse is the GOAT? The HRRN Fantasy Derby, presented by Claiborne Farm. Saturday, May 2nd at 5 p.m. Eastern. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information and to see the full field.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Hey, don't forget to download your copy of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet today from the App Store or Google Play. And don't miss their special Long Road to the Kentucky Derby going on now. 12 weekly issues for only $12. Go to bloodhorse.com/TC to learn more. Well, I told you it was going to be a busy couple of hours here this morning. I hope you enjoyed the program. My thanks to Tom Amos and Ron Moquette for taking the time to be with me in the first half of the program. Our Industry Star of the Week, Breeders' Cup and Dora Delgado. Arthur Hancock from Stone Farm, Carl Nasker with me just a short time ago, and Hall of Famer Mike Smith. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this show and all of our programs. You can also check it out on Apple Podcasts as well. Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman back with you on Wednesday for Red Brand Radio, kicking off at 3 Eastern. Make sure you tune into that. For my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, and thanks to everyone who took the time to weigh in on our poll question here this morning, I'm Mike Pena. We'll talk to you next time on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Go Steelers!